Good morning. I'm Scott Jones from Utah State University. If you notice the disciplines from the department descriptions there, it's all about plants, soils, climate, water, environment. So I'm not really much into the specifics of gas emissions. I've gotten interested in this because of my background in soil physics. We found that throwing physics at manure was a pretty good way to look at some new research, and specifically trying to understand how we can contribute to a better understanding of gas emissions from animal feeding operations. So we were funded by USDA Air Quality Program about 5 years ago to look at some of these issues. I think they were targeting just the fact that they needed data in order to understand better where the emissions were coming from and how that was generated. So we set out to really try to get at these different greenhouse gas and regulated gases being emitted from animal feeding operations. So our initial objectives were to develop novel instrumentation for gas monitoring. We looked at closed chambers as the way to do that. And initially, we were interested in applying metal oxide sensors. There's a variety of metal oxide sensors that are sensitive to different gases. And we spent about a year looking at a variety of sensors, and our conclusion was that the technology just wasn't there. The range of measurements, about an order of magnitude, and the resolution just wasn't where you needed it to get the kind of data that we needed. So we ended up going with the FTIR-based gas measurements and closed-loop system and developed our own customized control system. Another goal of ours was to model gas emissions from animal manure. Since in soil physics, we tend to focus a lot on modeling things in soil processes of water and gas movement. So we wanted to apply the same principles to manure. So we developed this portable gas measurement system, monitoring both weather conditions as well as the emissions coming from different animal manure sources. And the basic system you can see here consists of the FTIR. We have tubing and cables running to the different hardware modules, the chambers. This is actually a custom-built chamber similar to the LIQOR measurement system, GasMet portable FTIR. And then we had to develop our own interface to a PC and handheld loggers to collect data and control the chambers. After about 4.5 years, we finally had a system we could take some measurements with. So we went to Phoenix, Arizona, to this dairy, and looked at a variety of sources here and decided on we wanted to monitor sludge, fresh manure, and some of the dried manure that's out in the pens. So in terms of the areas, the fresh manure is about 3.5% of the area that we see here. Dry is about 95% of the area, and the sludge is about 1.5%. So the treatments that we set up, we had four chambers on each of the three treatments here. And the way that we designed this system had about 15 feet of cable, so very short. And part of the reason is we wanted to get our measurements in 5 minutes so that we could get hourly measurements on each of these samples. So a 60-minute cycle, and we would flush or calibrate the FTIR on a daily basis, and we didn't see very much drift at all at that rate. Also, there was, as you can see, we had the different manure sources brought to us just because of the short distances that we could bring our chambers out of the trailer. Just some data that Some of you might be interested in. The pH varied from about 7.5 to 9. The electrical conductivity of the saturation paste ranged from about 3 to about 30. Nitrogen percentages were 2.2, 2.8, and 1.7. And carbon was 35, 37, and 17. So this is a set of measurements we made over a 30-day period. This was in the month of May. So in Phoenix, it's about in the 90s at that time of year. You know, it'd be nice if we could run this thing for a year, but obviously limitations on students graduating and other things that you have to deal with. So the initial fluxes from fresh manure are shown here. CO2 fluxes. You can see the fluxes in terms of micromoles of CO2 per meter squared per second from day of year 120 to about 155. In Phoenix, it doesn't rain much in May, so we actually added, about 2 weeks into this, we added 1 liter of water to each sample, kind of sprinkled that on just to show some kind of sense of what a recovery might look like if you did have a rain event. Because obviously, as you can see, this drops down pretty quickly and you end up with some baseline fluxes over time. So now I'll zoom out and show you the overall fluxes just to give you a sense of what the different treatments, so the fresh manure, the dried, and the sludged, in terms of the CO2, methane, and ammonia. Now the FTIR obviously will analyze other gases, but these were the ones that were significant and worth looking at. Others were not significant. So CO2, this is 160 micromoles in each of the CO2 values. This is 1.2 micromoles in terms of CH4 and 1 micromole in terms of ammonia. So it's surprising to me that the dried manure was still emitting at pretty significant levels compared to the fresh and the sludge. Methane was almost not there in terms of the dried manure treatments, but ammonia was similarly high compared to the other two treatments in this case. So these are our flux values over this 30-day period, and looked pretty similar, except in one case of the methane in the dried manure in terms of their shape. So taking those and simply taking averages now, so I'm just showing the averages of those for the fresh, the dried, and the sludge treatments. You see those compared here, and now I'm showing the maximum values and also the minimum values in terms of CO2, about 400 grams per meter squared per day, and about 25 grams per meter squared per day towards the end of this month-long measurement cycle. In terms of methane, we got it to 1.7 grams per meter squared per day, and minimums were about 0.013 or 13 milligrams. And ammonia, 2.6 grams at the peak and about 5 milligrams at the minimum values there. And in terms of cumulative values, so month-long cumulative fluxes got up to about 2.5 kilograms of CO2 per meter squared over that month. For both the fresh and the sludge, the dried was about three-fourths of that. The methane, 1.8 grams per meter squared over that month period for the fresh, or sorry, the sludge treatment. The fresh was less than half of that, and then the dried manure was about 10% of that. And then in terms of the ammonia, 2.6 grams for both the fresh and the sludge treatments, and about two-thirds of that for the dried treatment there. So those are the data we collected with the system. We did follow up with that and tried to put some of these chambers on some of the compost piles they had there. And you know, this process of developing this system and actually finally getting it out into the dairy to do some measurements, We had a graduate student there that was, he was in electrical engineering, and he developed a system and built it, but he didn't know much about the science. So by the time we got around to analyzing this data, you know, he was gone, and we found out there was a major problem with some of the critical valves that were changing the gas flow. So we didn't get any additional data there, and I guess at this point I'm bringing this up because I guess I'm going to have a different opinion about running these kind of systems. It does take a technician and a significant amount of knowledge both in being able to troubleshoot electrical circuits and some of these kind of things, especially with a custom-built system, as well as having a scientist that really knows what to look for in terms of the data that you're actually collecting. So our lesson was don't let your PhD student graduate too early because you're going to be in trouble later on. All right, so in summary, we developed this automated FTIR-based gas emissions measurement system with 12 chambers. That was nice in terms of getting statistically meaningful data. You know, 3 replicate measurements was very helpful. We monitored 30-day emissions and saw significant emissions from CO2, methane, and ammonia. And in terms of the modeling, we're still kind of looking for somebody to collaborate with on that, since we're not experts on the biological and other aspects of the manure. So that's kind of where we got to. I will say one other thing, though. We did get a paper published that came out in the Journal of Environmental Quality, and the title is Physical and Thermal Characteristics of Dairy Cattle Manure. And it was interesting, as we were developing that paper, basically taking our physics that we have applied to soils for over 100 years and throwing it at manure to see what came out of it, there wasn't a lot of information out there. So I think this might be a valuable contribution to your discipline in trying to understand the, you know, the water content is such a factor in the emissions, the thermal heat transfer, and some of those kind of things that are very important if you're going to do numerical modeling of these kind of processes. So thank you.
Thank you. We have time for a few questions.
You mentioned you wanted to keep your sampling line fairly short. Were you heating that line for the lung?
We didn't, nope. So we probably had some issues with condensation. And
did you ever test your zero time on the line by putting like a scrubber at the inlet head end and watching how long it would take that line to come to zero?
Yeah, you know, we put this in the lab and did some calibration work with it, and so we tested it with different calibration gases to see, and we didn't see any issues in the lab, but of course temperature changes there weren't very significant.
Water vapor is what kills you with Teflon lines and reaching equilibrium with the ammonia. So if you're in the lab using zero air gas, that's not really mimicking what your field situation is doing.
Yeah. And you know, we thought about scrubbing the water vapor, but I guess that's another problem to, so.
You've taken manure from presumably pens and some sort of stockpile or whatever.
Yep.
And placed it with your chambers rather than taking your chambers to the pens or the stockpile or whatever.
Exactly.
Would you like to address the changes in characteristics, particularly the density, the compaction issues, etc., and the removal of the animals from the system, water input, nitrogen input on your measurements?
Yeah. So I was surprised that the dry manure showed such high emissions, and that they dropped off in a similar way. So I assume that was because of the disturbance. You know, they brought a front-end loader in, and who knows how deep they took that from. So that disturbance was certainly a factor here. If we'd just gone into the pen and laid the chambers down, I assume that may not have been as significant initially in terms of the emissions. The fresh manure was on concrete. So we were just scraping that up and putting it in a bucket. Obviously, if you've got compacted manure that the animals are continuing to disturb, there's a whole lot of complexity there that we're not dealing with in these measurements, which are much, much more simplified. And then over that period of 30 days, there's no disturbance to this at all. So obviously, the fact that there's no disturbance is, this is sort of a, maybe you've applied into the pasture and now you're not disturbing it kind of scenario. So, all right.
Okay.
Thank you.
Thanks very much.